Keeping It Brief is a discussion show centered around current events of questionable importance. While the guys occasionally sound like they know what they're talking about, nothing they say should be considered fact. Also, the show deals with adult themes and includes adult language. If you can't handle that, well, get the fuck out.
I think I'm gonna put on Wu-Tang Enter the Seven Chambers, and I'm just gonna watch all of these to Wu-Tang. Well, you know, Derek, I just like to set myself up for success. What can I say?
They can deconstruct my porn habits all they want, but I don't know if they're gonna get too far.
What do you think Angela Merkel's porn habits are?
Optimus Prime gets infinity miles to the gallon. All right, we're going to do this, and we're going to do it fucking big. You guys ready?
I'm in.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Well, how's it going, everybody? And welcome to Keeping It Brief, a conversation on culture and common courtesy. We discuss one thing that society brought to us this week and five things that we saw through the interwebs. My name is Christian. I will be your moderator and co-host. I'm joined, as always, by the other two members of the Quaint Triumvirate. The first being the one and only Kevin Osmond. KO, how are we doing?
Doing great. I had a nice weekend in LA, and looking forward to, I've relinquished a lot of my sports fandoms now, so I'm looking forward to kind of some non-disappointing times right now for the next little while.
Yep, I'm in the same vein, and we're just not going to talk about it, but sports are pretty much dead to me. For a quick minute, accepting, God, the Dallas Cowboys, which is just never who you want to hang your sports hat on. Also joining us, someone who is not necessarily in the same dark place that KO and I find ourselves as the sports go. Derek Schiffenauer, DJS.
Yeah, hey, Christian. doing well here. Just kind of basking in the glow of some rare San Francisco sunshine, as well as a Giants divisional series win. Gonna try to ride that train as long as I can.
I've honestly resigned myself to the fact that the Giants are going to win the World Series again. And the funny thing is that so has everybody else in the city, except they haven't resigned themselves to the fact. They've just come to assume that, well, yep, you know, even numbered year. Everything that we do to win the World Series is happening, so there's no reason it's not going to happen. And I have no reason to not believe them. Fucking sucks, man.
At this point, I'm kind of treating it like a pitcher throwing a perfect game. You just don't talk about it, and you just wait and see what happens. That's all I'm going to say about the Giants' chances of winning the World Series.
That's all I got to say about that. Rundown?
Oh, rundown. Rundown.
A quick talk on Common Courtesy. The best new shows of the TV season / most embarrassing. There's a $23,000 flight from Singapore to New York, and if I had the money, I would spend it on that. Michigan State students, show up and support your top 15 team, please. Marvel, 21st Century Fox, get in a Fantastic Four fight, it's getting nasty. And there was a big Harry Potter reveal, but maybe not that big, but whatever, we're going to talk about Harry Potter anyways.
Chica, yeah.
Cool. So as we're starting to do around these parts, we like to begin our show with a little talk about common courtesy or perhaps relationship advice. Last podcast, we discussed the common courtesy associated with drinking someone else's whiskey should they leave it out in a public area. And this time we're going to talk about something that I encountered not too long ago and encounter somewhat regularly. So I am a fast walker, I think. Not like particularly fast, but faster than the common bear.
Brisk. You're brisk.
Brisk
walker
is probably the good word, yes. And I often find myself in situations where I am behind somebody else, and I'm not in a rush, but I have to slow down. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to like creepily speed in front of them just to slow down once I do. So the question I would like to posit for you guys is, if you're walking behind someone when you have nowhere to be, you just walk faster than them, is it appropriate to speed up to get by them without continuing at that speed?
So I would meet you kind of halfway. I'm kind of in your boat too, Christian. I'm not as much of a fast walker as just a naturally long gait. I'm all legs. And
you're
so,
a large human being as well.
Thank you. Heavy D is what some may call me. What I do in this situation, and this happens to me all the time, is I definitely circumnavigate the slowpoke. And then I will power walk for maybe about half a walk in order to build a comfortable cushion from that individual. And so I don't have to feel the guilt and the potential awkwardness of catching up to that person or having that person catch up to me.
Yeah, that's I think that's the fair strategy. That's what you should do to at least be polite. You got to think about it before you walk by. Like, you can't just wander by and then just like slow down and look at something. But it gets really tough when you're right about the same pace with somebody. Like, you kind of catch people and then you realize while you're walking behind them, like, hey, this isn't a bad pace to be going. I guess right. I could be walking a little bit faster. I had that happen the other day, and it was a very it was a weird, there was like me and my fiance, we were behind another couple and that we caught up to them, but they were walking at a good enough pace. I was like, shit, if we get in front of them, we're going to have to almost jog just to like make it reasonable that we did. And so we ended up having that discussion and staying back and just taking it easy.
Yeah, but that's almost weirder where you're just like trying to judge what the appropriate distance is and slowing your natural gait. I live with women. And I spoke to them about this, and both of them were like, walk past us. Like, do not just be walking behind
just a woman. Don't want to lurk.
Yeah, like, do not lurk. Like, we can tell what's going on. Which is, I think, usually the strategy I take. Unfortunately, I'm not quite as long-legged as you, Derek. If you're a giraffe, I'm more of a aardvark, shall we say. I find it hard when it's, they're exactly what you're talking about. They're not walking slow, but they're not walking as fast as I am. And you have to like make that judgment call where it's, will I be able to get past them enough before the next stoplight? Because the worst is when you pass somebody, stoplight comes, and then they pass you, and then you find yourself back in the same exact scenario. Yeah.
You do not want to be stuck at the stoplight with them. If it comes to that, you rush into traffic. You dodge cars. You get out in front of that.
You frogger that shit.
You frogger that
nice,
shit.
Nice safe gap.
Yeah, sometimes I've actually, this is a true story, not a lie, I've legitimately crossed the street unnecessarily in order to avoid that awkwardness.
There you go.
Because I hustled past somebody and then they were going to catch me before the, you know, the side cross was over, and I just couldn't handle it. Just went across the street and then I had to cross back across the street later. But thankfully, they had turned at that point, so it was only awkward for me.
Oh, man. Awkward human problems. They're great, aren't they?
They are. Speaking of human problems, there was a young man. His name was Bruce. And they made many, many a story about this man. Mm. Currently, Derek, they are working on what some would call the ultimate origin story. Because I believe this is the first long-form version of Bruce Wayne's childhood that we've been introduced to. And we are discussing the TV show Gotham.
That's right. Yeah, Gotham debuted this pilot season on Fox, and I was really excited to tune in for it. It was kind of billed as, like, I don't know, Law and Order or NCIS Gotham, right? Where so it follows around a young James Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, played by Ben McKenzie of OC fame. And he does kind of, you know, villain of the week, cop things. But it also features a young Bruce Wayne as a child. And I was sadly, as big Batman fan, I was very disappointed in what I saw. And
you're very disappointed in child Bruce Wayne. You weren't angry. You were just disappointed.
I was just disappointed in him.
Gotta step it up.
I think it's just hard because, you know, we recently just finished probably the best adaptation of Batman ever with the Dark Knight trilogy.
Some would argue the best adaptation of any comic
book. Yeah, I think that's actually a very fair point. And to put the production values of a Christopher Nolan production up against a made-for-TV broadcast television show, it just doesn't compare. And it's tough to kind of, you know,
reconcile what you've seen recently with what you're seeing now.
Exactly. Reconcile the two. That being said, there were some high points. Ben McKenzie is actually really good as James Gordon. His sidekick, his partner, is kind of this slovenly, overweight cop who's actually also a character in the comics, Bullock, Detective Harvey Bullock, and he's mm-hmm. really good. It also features a lot of Batman's rogues gallery as kind of younger before they turned really evil kind of characters. And the Penguin is one of those, and he's really well done in the show. Or I like his character so far.
Well, he's been a recurring character thus far, if I understand correctly.
That's right. He has been a recurring character. He's kind of like the lackey for the local mob boss, who's played by Jada Pinkett Smith, oddly enough.
Is she she's the Kingpin, right? Is there a connection there towards the historical character? I know the Kingpin from the TV cartoon version of this narrative.
So Kingpin was a Spider-Man villain.
Oh shit, my bad. Well, I'm totally wrong.
But similar kind of situation. Yeah, more akin to in the Dark Knight trilogy, like a Falcone, or a Maroni. Kind of the street level mob boss is what her character is. She hangs out in a nightclub, which is very similar to what Penguin goes on to do in the comic books. And
it's also what the bad guy does in Too Fast, Too Furious. Is it Too Fast, Too Furious when they're in Miami? Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
But
are you in on this show? Are you gonna continue to give it your weekly attention, or is this going to be something that you perhaps return to should you hear that it, I don't know, turns it around in a more serious way? Yeah, finds its footing. I guess that's the appropriate term.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tap out for a bit. I feel like a lot of these genre shows take a little bit of time to kind of find their stride. I think Arrow was another very good example of that. The first couple episodes, not that great, but after a full season was released on Netflix, I went back and powered through that. And that actually turns out to be a pretty darn good show.
People love that.
Yeah. I'm hoping that Gotham turns out to be the same.
Now, Derek, do you have a quick opinion on the spinoff of the Arrow universe, the Flash show?
I've heard good things about it. Haven't watched it yet.
I have as well. I think I want to give it a chance. And if people have told me that Arrow is something worthwhile. So I'm want to try to get into some of the good comic book TV shows I got going on.
Yeah, season 2 of Arrow drops on Netflix this week. So now is as good a time as any to jump on board the binge train.
Yeah, why not?
I like that. Yeah. The Flash was certainly my favorite superhero growing up.
Did you watch the old show? There was a show that ran for one season.
The one where it's like very, very bright red and like serious yellow. Yes. I did watch that show. I also watched Iron Man, that cartoon that existed. But generally, I just thought the Flash had a very cool power.
Yeah.
Until my buddy's older brother, who was much more well-versed in the intricacies of interacting superpowers, explained to me how the Green Lantern could just create a box that could hold the Flash.
At which point,
I was pretty devastated. It's kind of the...
But I love theoretical superhero arguments, because you could just say, well, the Flash can just move so fast, he would vibrate through those walls.
But then I think you can just continue to make stronger and stronger walls. I think the Green Lantern, although butchered by Ryan Reynolds, perhaps missed out on being the most feasible superhero that could have existed there for a while. But that's a conversation for a different time. KO.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any TV shows that have struck your fancy over this new season?
I actually have come across a couple. The surprising one to me has been the show How to Get Away with Murder, the Viola Davis joint. She of multiple Academy nominations. I like her as an actress, and so I gave the show a shot. And it's kind of a... I'm a sucker for any lawyer show in general. I mean, I watch Suits. I watch Franklin and Bash. I love Law and Order.
You shouldn't tell people about Franklin and Bash, yeah.
Oh, man. That is... I could, people who, it's a great show. I don't feel like I even need to defend it. It's a high quality piece of entertainment.
It's pretty ironic that Zach Morris ended up being like a douchebag lawyer. Kind of works out pretty perfectly, I think.
he's kind of got a type. He just had to wait till he could grow into it a little bit there. But yeah, he's definitely got his role for his career set. But How to Get Away with Murder, not too shabby. Viola Davis and a bunch of law students running around doing a bunch of inappropriate stuff. Pretty soapy. So I don't know if I'm going to like be a long-term viewer of the show, but I am somewhat hooked in terms of like the arc that they have going, which I'm assuming will go for the next 13 or 20 episodes here. So I think I'm going to give it a another a third or fourth episode and see where it goes.
Nice. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's a weird. I feel like I should be a little embarrassed to watch that show, but I'm keeping strong, and I'm gonna give it a shot.
So I have a question for you. ABC is kind of making their bread and butter this kind of show. They have Scandal and Revenge as well. Have you given any of those a shot?
I can speak a little bit to this, Derek.
Okay, Christian, come on in.
I'm gonna step in because the show that I also have watched this new season is How to Get Away with Murder. I've also been down this road. And the whole reason I did it is because of what you're talking about.
Right.
And specifically, the woman who's in, like, the showrunner is actually named Shonda Rhimes. So why this is a... Viola Davis like vehicle, it's actually a Shonda Rhimes joint.
Okay. And she's the showrunner of How to Get Away with Murder.
Yes, and she's also behind Scandal and Grey's Anatomy. I don't know about Revenge specifically, but because of what you're saying, because they built the whole thing around it, I wanted to see what it was about.
Yeah.
I have not gotten into either of those other two shows other than seeing one-offs, but having started from the beginning of this one, there's a greater than zero chance that I become a closet How to Get Away with Murder fan.
I love it. I love it. Well, my girlfriend loves Scandal and she loves Revenge, so you guys are in great company.
Yeah. You know, I've seen both episodes of both those shows, but I think Christian's right. Seeing that first episode, you gotta start early. You gotta get yourself in there early. But sure. I think it should be interesting to see because this series is actually, while Shonda Rhimes owns it, she's not the actual like creator. She's not the writer for the show. She owns it and has another person who's actually like creatively directing it. So I think this is the first one where she's kind of trying to do that and expand her empire. There's actually a man who's in charge, who's writing this entire, there's a guy, I don't even know his name, but some writer is like in charge of kind of all the creative and writing for the show. So it's kind of coming from a different voice than I think her other two shows are.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think it's like the same. Yeah, no. I
oh,
think
no, no,
it's
no.
Like...
Don't get me wrong. It hits all the boxes. Don't get me wrong.
Thematically, it's similar.
Like, it's going for the exact
I'm
same
pretty
viewers.
Pretty sure this was maybe like an intern that was like, hey, Shonda, maybe we should do this. She was like, yeah, put your name on it. But I think Shonda probably has a fair bit of influence on the whole thing.
So I missed it. What's the basic premise here? Like what?
I don't even think that ever got out. But Viola Davis is a lawyer who teaches in law school, and she allows five students at the law school to be her interns.
She allows four, but she picks
an
unbeknownst fifth.
Mm-hmm. He just had the moxie that really had the moxie to get chosen there.
Yeah, it was either that or he saw. A detective going down on her in her office. So it was one of those two things.
Sure, of course.
See, there's a lot of the plot's already thickening, and we've only given
so
you like
layers.
A sliver of this show.
So many layers. But yeah, she. Go ahead, Kayo. Sorry, continue.
Oh no, well that's basically the plot. The five kids help her out in solving these murders, defending these murder cases every week, and there's another entire. Other layer of all these kids at the end, it's a lot of flash forwards and flashbacks where these kids kill somebody and the entire season is a flashback to show you how they got to the point where they killed this person and are trying to cover their tracks.
So the idea
is that they've
spent the whole present narrative. This is what I would guess. They spent the whole present narrative learning how to get away with murder, whereas in this like the post or the future narrative that's happening simultaneously, they are covering up the murder that they committed.
Using all kind of the tools that they learned from her by like being her interns. So it should be, yeah, I don't know. Give it a shot, people. Get out there.
It also takes place at one of the country's most prestigious universities.
Where does it take place at?
It's UC filmed Davis? At USC.
Oh, really?
Kale, oh, you didn't recognize Truesdale?
No, it's pilot? Not. I did. No, it's not. I thought you meant that the plot line itself. It was a USC.
Oh no. Yeah. It's filmed at. It's filmed at USC. The whole thing, but it's Philadelphia in the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, real talk. Speaking of, just really rich places like the University of Southern California. There is a flight that is either for ostensibly rich folk or folk that just have the ultimate expense account that a seemingly regular human being participated in and wrote a really, really good article about that. If you've ever flown and said, man, this fucking sucks, you should go read this because this is proof that it doesn't have to suck.
It does not.
It just has to cost $23,000.
$23,000 Singapore dollars, so only like $19,500 in
that's
US
a good
dollars.
Point. That's a good point, Kevin.
So, all
right. And I mean, hey, maybe like the economy comes back and our conversion rate's better and it gets down to like a solid 15 in our lifetime.
Sure.
So it's called the Suites Class Flight, and I think it only exists or primarily exists on the Singapore to New York flight operated by Singapore Airlines. And it is a fucking joke. It's the whole... Did you guys read this whole thing?
Oh, I read the whole thing and I looked at the amazing pretty pictures that went along with it. And it's pretty astounding.
It's engrossing. It's very engrossing to see the opulence that that can exist like that.
It looks like the best experience of my life, but it would take place on a plane. Like, this guy's getting Dom Perignon, he's getting foie gras, fried quail egg. I feel like he ate lobster.
Pretty sure he ate 7 different types of lobster over the course of like 15 hours. Like, it was a really, there was lobster kept getting mentioned. It was ridiculous. I would kill to have the bed though. I feel like the food is one thing. Having a bed like that is next level. The next level stuff.
A double it bed looks like, in the sky.
It's like a nicer version of my living room with 5-star food brought to me immediately while you're flying through the air. While you're 30,000 feet in the gosh darn sky flying through the air.
I feel like actually one of my favorite parts about that was that this guy at the very beginning, he's like, oh, I went to check in at the regular place and somebody like greeted me with a smile. But then I remembered there's a special first class lounge that you can go to. And it's like this hotel, like lobby area. It's just this, it was very funny. Just like nothing you do is even close to the same when you're going on a flight like that. Like even your airport experience is a whole different level.
I will say, I give this guy credit for a couple things. One is that he probably ate like $700 to $800 worth of actual food. Like what he ate would cost you in real life, and drink is probably in that range. So good on you. And he also made a mention of how he was bothered by having to sleep, which is exactly how I would feel in this experience. I would not sleep. There would be no sleeping. It would just be the food and the Dom Perignon and this coffee that costs $200 a pound. Just keep that shit coming.
Yeah, man.
All night long.
I feel like I would have drank a lot more, but he probably wanted to like remember the whole experience very specifically. So he avoided that, but I would have just been tasting out all the whiskeys that they had on board. Would have been great.
One of my favorite parts is when he asks like if he can get a tour of the rest of the plane.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, sure. private
let's
tour.
Let's walk you through the basement back here where all the normals sit
and the plebes.
Here's the lower class in the with the extra room, and it's I didn't even realize that those levels existed on planes. I guess it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's
makes sense?
I guess there's money for all of that stuff, but it's like at that point why wouldn't you just charter like your own plane, you know?
Like, so I read an extensive conversation about this on the Reddit, and chartering your own plane is probably a little bit more expensive, one, and the amenities that you would get for chartering your own plane are considerably less.
No, so those are the two.
Yeah, those are the two like perks of this, is that you do get to like eat like a king. The perk of like a private plane is you can like bring your own food on, so maybe you could have a similar experience. But yeah, the other thing is that this is not generally for people with that level of money that are capable of chartering their own planes. This is for people with either just like absolutely astronomical amounts of miles, or people that are getting this like comped as a perk of their life, which is the crazy part. So it's like Morgan Freeman flies, like they said, like Morgan Freeman is one of the people that they referenced that would fly this sort of thing or had flown this sort of thing, and that was probably comped by whoever took him out to Singapore is kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You're just treating him to the nicest possible company money, I guess.
Honestly, we are just not even remotely doing what this experience looks like justice. We'll put it on the site, click the link, check it out if you haven't seen it yet. It's
awesome.
It's mind-boggling, dude. Like, I'm happy when I'm on an international flight and I get drinks both ways. Like, this is just so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I'm really happy when I'm on my Southwest flight and I'm sitting in the seat that doesn't have a seat in front of me. That's that's my bar. That's where my life's at. So,
that is ways kind of to the go. Peak right there.
Exit row.
You know it's the exit row. Call it the Sultan seat. But after seeing this, I don't think that's an apt description.
You know what you gotta have? You gotta have that A list to get that Sultan seat.
Yeah, you do.
Gotta have that A list. Mm-hmm. Or you have to be whatever idiot is paying for Business Select, which is another conversation for a different time.
That's for the lower expense account people right there. That's what that is.
There's no perk between A15 and A16. I refuse to believe it. I absolutely refuse to believe
it. Yeah, but there is one between A1 and A16 if you buy your ticket early enough, you know.
Better shot at the Sultan seat.
Got lots of opportunity there. A1, you get to pick any plane in the whole fucking any seat in the whole fucking plane, dude.
Any plane in the whole fucking seat? Jesus. And it's steak sauce.
Get the front row, you get the Sultan seat, you get a nice aisle seat, wherever you want.
If I had A1, I would put it on every social media outlet available to me immediately. It'd be on Instagram, it'd be on Twitter, it'd be on Facebook. I can't even think of if there's more, but that would come immediately to mind. I'd probably go into my email and find everybody I know, email it to them. I've never known anybody who is A1.
Yeah, that's kind of like being number one on a fast food place's like receipt number or something. You know, it's just like somebody was first here. I don't know who that was, but somebody showed up today and enjoyed a Big Mac real early in the day.
Mm-hmm. All right, so moving away from the Sultan seat and into the Spartans of Michigan State.
Mm.
The AD of Michigan. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, they can't fill seats.
Oh!
That's the segue right there.
Damn. I'm so sorry for cutting that off. From the Sultan from the filled Sultan seat to the empty Spartan seat.
There it is. Nice.
Is that it? All right, we're going with it. The Michigan State athletic director has come out as angry at his students because they're not showing up for his number 8 in the country team. And I think this man has a legitimate point.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
Disagree.
That's bonkers.
Disagree.
Agree.
Nope.
What do they do? What else are you going to do? What are you going to do in Michigan State besides watch your number 8 ranked team in the nation?
Dude, it was probably cold as hell outside. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it wasn't like sunny and nice weather. The students are the ones, they paid for the ticket. They're paying their tuition already. Like, you already got the revenue. I don't see what good it does. And maybe you disagree with what the fans are doing, but like the way he's handling it is like the worst. Like, why are you going to give a hard time to the people that are paying like to go see this?
Well,
it doesn't make sense
because it's not a business transaction, dude, because they believe in some sort of home field advantage because they have to go to the Big House in Ohio State every single, like every other year at the very least, and play in places where there's 100,000 screaming fans, and they want to recreate that environment, and they sold 13,000 seats and they just didn't come. They just didn't show up.
It's just embarrassing to see TV footage of your high-ranked team and empty seats in the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but then create a mechanism where that whereby people can easily exchange tickets, and there's like a really easy way. Like, if people, I feel like people that pay for a ticket, if they want to buy season seats and not attend the game once, like, I don't think, unless there's, if there's some kind of waiting list and there's a way that you can get people to like to commit to coming to games or something like that, then try to find some way to get people that want them to buy them. But I'm sure that they were happy to sell the tickets to the people. So it's, I don't feel like it's a duty to show up if just because you have a ticket to something. It's,
it was
kind of
an in-conference, it was an undefeated in-conference opponent though, dude, like that. I don't know. We went to the most fair weather school that I can possibly imagine. Like, the difference between the Coliseum when USC is good versus the Coliseum when USC is not good is mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Absolutely mind-boggling. And if our team was number 10 in the country, even if it was 90 degrees against, there would be 85% of the student section there, and that is a considerably larger student section. There's 50,000 people that attend Michigan State University. They had 13,000 seats. Like, that's not an outrageous thing. I agree that perhaps they should have a different transaction mechanism, and it does sound like through what he's tweeting, that's the goal. I think it's like a shame.
I don't know. I think him saying he's disappointed and embarrassed, it's like, you're not, it's a poor way to handle that, because you're not going to convince people to show up that doing that, like giving people a hard time about like them not wanting to stand out in like the 40 degree weather and watch a fourth quarter in which your team was winning by 24 points. Like, I mean, it's not like it was a close game either. And so, it's, I don't know. It's,
it was a close game. It was 27-22. They scored 19 points in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. And I don't know. I think on a rainy, cold night, expecting students to stay in the stands, is not something feasible, and then handling it the way he did is also like a very poor, was a very poor way to do it. I mean, I've been to football games in the rain, and I've stayed at some and I've left some, but I don't feel like, I don't know, I don't think it's like necessary that, I don't think it's necessary for people to stay. You get to do it, you spent your money already, so you get to do what you want. And then, like, if you could give your ticket away and when you leave and let somebody else come in for you, that'd be great. Have something for like that if that's like what your problem is. But I think like trying to shame people into sitting at the game when they probably already own a Michigan State jersey and have gone to other games and like spend money at the bookstore is like the bad way to go about it.
I get that.
I don't know.
I think just coming from it personally, like, I have never left a game early. Just if I'm going to spend money to go to a game, I'm going to get my money's worth out of it. I don't care if it's a blowout one way or the other. I'm going to stay in my seat for the entire damn game. So when I see stuff like this, it just blows my mind.
Yeah,
that's more of a personal story than what you're discussing.
You're right.
I just think there's a difference in... I think it's a context thing. I really do. And I think college football is a context in which it like really, really matters. I just think it does. It's the same thing with college basketball. Like, if this was Duke in college basketball, I know that's obviously a pretty slippery slope to compare it to that. But even if they're up 40, if they're in the top 10, it doesn't matter who they're playing. That thing is packed. And you can compare it to, I mean, I don't know. In my opinion, college football with a top 10 team, every game is like a baseball playoff game. The importance is just as high. And you can watch these baseball playoffs. There are not empty seats. It's not a thing. You go to a game of that magnitude and you stay. But I think the big problem is that people didn't even really come. Like, I don't think it's all of a sudden that people left. I think it's that people didn't even show up. And frankly, you're living in Lansing, Michigan. You're going to use the rain as an excuse. Like, that's your excuse. Oh, it was nasty outside. I personally understand watching from home, and that's why I don't think I'll ever buy a season ticket to a football game. because I prefer watching football from home as a general rule. But I think it's a problem. Like, I think it's legitimate for the AD to get mad about that. I think it's legitimate.
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of the times too, when at these big schools, it's like these things aren't, there's not as much of a connection that you have necessarily to like the players. It's not like when you're at a high school, like at your high school or something, where you have kind of a personal connection or something. It's like, I think athletes get so kind of insulated from the rest of the student body, and it's seen much more as like a professional transaction to me, especially for these big schools that are charging lots of money for these things, than it is necessarily like a support your kind of like community kind of event. Whereas like, I think that's kind of like how he has a different perspective. The athletic director has a different perspective on that than a normal student would. So I think that's a part of it too. Like, you just don't feel the connection to like want to support these people, want to support these athletes like this, like constantly when it's raining and you just want to go home.
Agree to disagree, it sounds like.
I think that's where we're at. Yeah.
A couple of people that are disagreeing to disagree.
Oh boy. That's the segue.
Is that it?
Yeah, you did it. Crushed it.
Thank you. That would be Marvel and 21st Century Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, 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 dun. I can't do the 21st Century Fox sound right now.
It's close.
So 21st Century Fox is the maker of the Fantastic Four films.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel is like the entity that birthed them.
Yes, and has creative control over everything else that isn't a motion picture.
First off, what an outrageous way to split rights.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely unbelievable that they just gave, you can make whatever movies you want, but everything else still remains with us. That is pretty absurd.
Yeah, but that was the highest value thing they could sell when they had to sell all these things, was movie rights.
KO, if you could get your business acumen and your like rational financial thought out of here for about 5 minutes, that would be much appreciated.
This is for the kids, KO.
I'm just really glad that you're comfortable with people not showing up to football games and Marvel selling away the rights to make their own movies.
People can do whatever they want with their own property. I think that's the theme in my point right here.
Kevin's coming from a strictly libertarian standpoint, no matter what it is, and I respect that.
Kevin has on this podcast legitimately said that he would rather have Putin as a leader.
He did. That is true.
I backtracked on that. All right, I'll have you know.
I don't think you did. I think you later like backed it up with another statement. But we'll keep going.
I hedged.
All right.
So as part of this disagreement. Mm-hmm. Marvel is just like, all right, we're not going to make any more Fantastic Four comics because we don't like the movie that you're making.
That's pretty much it. So Marvel, or Disney's largest shareholder, who is also the CEO of Marvel, is Isaac Perlmutter. And he was not happy with how the last negotiations with Fox Studios went over the film rights to Fantastic Four. So he basically swung his big Marvel dick and said, we're not going to be printing any more Fantastic Four comics. Also, which is like probably the like least amount of concern that 21st Century Fox has, but mm-hmm. it also means that they're not going to be making any toys and any other kind of promotional things on the Marvel side, which for fans is kind of a bummer. To put it into context, Fantastic Four, although it isn't the greatest selling comic that Marvel has, it was the comic that launched the Marvel Universe in 1961. So it has historical value. And it does have a lot of committed fans who probably for a year, starting when 21st Century Fox starts their promotional run for Fantastic Four through the DVD release, there probably won't be a comic book for that time.
Which is a relatively big deal because it's one of the first long extended Fantastic Four absences.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. I mean, this is a comic that is going to end on issue 645. So it's been around for a while. And this is definitely going to be its longest absence. And this is why, as Kevin said, I guess Kevin didn't say this. What I'm saying is...
I probably said it. Don't
Marvel really shouldn't have sold the rights to some of their best properties back in the early 90s when they were bankrupt. Even though it is pretty understandable why they did that.
Did they have... I wonder if they had... did they have anything else like that was even valuable to sell? I mean, all they had was with the rights, I guess. So they had...
I mean, they literally, at the time, they just sold off their biggest properties. So at that time, that was the X-Men, Spider-Man, and Fantastic Four, along with others like Daredevil, Blade, and a couple. And pretty much all they had.
Sold a lot. Okay.
They sold a ton. Most of them, the only ones they kept were pretty much the ones they couldn't sell. And at that time, they were unpopular characters like Iron Man,
Guardians of the Galaxy, America,
and Guardians of the Galaxy. Exactly.
I didn't know Blade was a Marvel.
Thing. Ghost Rider as well.
Is Steel Marvel or DC?
That's DC, and also Shaq. But yes, that is DC.
Well, I think they might bring the Steel character back into the world.
Oh my God, no! I feel like they have to. There's like still a while before Shaq isn't associated with that anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I really think that in the DC, I think they're going to bring him back in. In the DC universe in some way. I think I read this recently. I can try and find the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I never got into Blade, though. My cousins were big into Blade. They like the vampire thing.
Blade was actually kind of what we have to thank for all this superhero movie trend we have. That was like the first commercially successful comic book movie property in years, and that allowed the green light for the X-Men movies, which allowed the green light for the Spider-Man movies, and then it just fucking snowballed from there. So you can go back to Blade.
Somewhere in there, the Fantastic Four movies tried to jump on the snowball, and everybody's like, get the fuck out of this snowball!
Yeah, we don't want you in our snowball.
This is a cool snowball. We'll take Jessica Alba, but everybody else out.
Yeah, poor Michael Chiklis.
I don't feel bad for Michael Chiklis. Those movies are so bad, those early ones.
Yeah, they're not good. And this one doesn't look good either, which is just a bummer.
Who knows?
The actors that are in it.
I like the cast decisions.
Yeah, the casting, I think they got a chance. So we'll see. Not a ton of... they're keeping it under... When is it coming out? Is it coming out soon here?
2015. So okay. It should be summer next year.
Not too bad.
Usually if you hear nothing for this long, though, it probably means it sucks.
It has been quiet, that's for sure. Yeah,
I feel like you got a lot of negative Guardians of the Galaxy publicity as well, though. Like, I did not have any idea. I heard a lot of like things that movie wasn't going to be very good from just like reading it and then from talking to people about it just like a little bit. So it's got to just have a little heart. Just got to put some heart into it.
Well,
it'll be all right.
Yeah, you know, I think I do trust the casting. Ever since Kate Mara got pushed in front of a subway, she's probably been like preparing for this role.
Hopefully
Michael B. Jordan was
caught up on season two.
Really good in Friday Night Lights. I haven't seen his other wonderful works. Billy Elliot, that guy's become like an actual legitimate actor. And this Miles Teller guy, the people seem to love him.
Plus, to be fair, 21st Century Fox has done awesome things with the X-Men franchise. X-Men Origins Wolverine aside, but everything else has been really good.
That's true. I have heard something interesting in that the Storms, so the Invisible Woman and the Human Torch, will still somehow be related.
Even
which
though
is funny,
Human Torch is now African American.
Yeah, so there's going to be some sort of story that will figure that one out. Speaking of stories, the greatest story of the last 15 years.
The greatest story of all time, I could say.
I think all time's a stretch, and it's probably past the last 15 years, now that I think about it. Right around last 15 years?
I don't know if it's necessarily...
All right, preview it. What is this?
Oh, sorry, it's Harry Potter. We're going to talk about Harry Potter.
There it is.
My bad. Gosh, sorry. I should have led with that. Hey, we're going to talk about Harry Potter. So there was some cryptic tweets released by probably the most power, one of the most powerful tweeters that exists, and that would be J.K. Rowling. I feel like if J.K. Rowling starts to tweet some real shit, people are going to listen. And she tweeted a mysterious tweet after saying, I feel like I'm going to tweet something mysterious. And it was solved.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It took a few days. And the article that I linked, that ended up not being what it was, if you saw that, Christian.
I did see that, yes.
Yeah. So what J.K. Rowling tweeted was she said this was a riddle. She previewed it by saying it might be a riddle or an anagram. So what she tweeted was, cry foe, run amok, faw awry, my wand won't tolerate this nonsense. And just it just launched a Twitter storm. The Reddit sleuths were on the case. Originally, one Redditor thought that he solved it with Harry returns, won't say any details now, a week off, no comment. But that was not the case.
No. Seems too real.
Seemed too good to be true to say Harry returns, right?
Instead,
it
was that Newt Scamander only meant to stay in New York for a few hours.
Dot, dot, dot.
Wait, so, but this Harry returns one was a true anagram of the, of her sentence.
Yeah, so it might be a whole bait and switch kind of situation, guys. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a rolling bait and switch.
It's funny how fans will loop Harry Potter details into any sort of like anagram possible. Like as long as the word Harry could be spelled,
right.
Like you knew it was going to be Harry Potter themed somehow.
Right. First things first, does Harry fit? Great. What are the other letters? Let's figure it out.
Do we have a Patronus? Is there a Patronus? Do we have enough words for Patronus?
Someone
I don't care what 37
Patronus.
Down is. I don't care. I don't care what the clue is. Is there a Patronus in this bitch? I'm holding on to the bait and switch possibility. Why not? Going for it. Maybe sure. That first person was right. JK was like, oh no, they got it so quick. Newt Scamander, thank God somebody else figured out something else.
Right, right. So why Newt Scamander makes sense for the listeners is JK Rowling is writing the screenplay right now for the next Harry Potter movie trilogy, which is based around Newt Scamander's books, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So it does logically make sense.
It does logically make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, in all likelihood, given the time, because it's supposed to be a period piece, as I believe we've previously discussed on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
There's like a very low likelihood that anyone involved in the time frame that the actual Harry Potter stories take place, mm-hmm. which is actually a real time. Did you guys know that there's like a reality time frame associated with the Harry Potter stories?
I don't think there's I feel like there isn't there. There's a ages of gaps there where it could lean either way by a year or two.
But Harry Potter has a specific birthday, right?
Yeah. No, it's been. I think it's been determined.
Oh, really?
Yes, actually, I believe it is 1980. Is when Harry Potter is born.
Really?
That
early? Oh, that's surprising to me.
Yeah, because I think the Battle of Hogwarts takes place, like the late 90s when he's like 17 or 18.
Oh, wow.
So it's like 96 is when that happens.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, that's I remember reading about this at some point when I was reading the whole series, and I think that they finally had, they finally had enough context clues to put it together based upon kind of some of the ghosts and some other like random dates that kind of get thrown about. I don't think J.K. Rowling had a specific years in mind though. I think that kind of was just a product of like some of the fake history she threw in there.
Mm. Yeah, I concur. I concur with that. I don't think it was something that was like laid out to be, but I mm-hmm. think it has to do, I want to say, and I could be totally wrong, that it has to do with the nearly headless Nick birthday that takes place.
Yes.
And that he references some date that gives
some kind
context,
of battle or something that he was
for his 500th death day, because I think is what they celebrate. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that is how they figure out when it takes place.
Yep.
I think that's like the guiding thing. And then there's just like weeks and months referenced, so you can kind of build a timeline of relativity based mm-hmm. off how far into the year certain things happen. So like, I think they just kind of assume that, let's say, like the first Quidditch match of the year generally happens around the same time, so they can build off of that for the rest of these timelines.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, but this takes place at turn of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. I think so it's 1920s, 1930s New York.
Oh, okay.
Is the time yeah. frame. But I'm sure what they will have is kind of little throwaways to little nods to to fans in terms of grandparents and great grandparents.
For sure.
And kind of, you know, well known wizards that were old by the time Harry Potter was around that could have, you know.
They could have a kid wizards. Dumbledore, right?
In theory. Exactly.
That could be a thing.
Yeah, they could be around for he could be around there. It'll be cool if they loop in some of that, but I think they're going to her main goal is to kind of steer clear of any specific Harry Potter things. I think she's kind of like wants to put that canon to bed and just I think she's probably just bored now and she wants to like try to make a movie. So we'll see what happens, but I think they're going to probably avoid any kind of like world building of that any further.
If you guys could dream a single dream, what is the one Harry Potter related story or medium that you would like to see? I already have mine, so I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really want a TV show, an X-Files type TV show following Harry Potter as an Auror and just kind of doing monster of the week, killing monsters and fighting wizards on the beat as Auror. That's what I want to see.
That's actually pretty responsible. I would have liked to see, when I was reading it, I really would have liked to see a Padfoot, like the four of them,
mm-hmm.
the Marauders Map dudes. I would have liked to see something about them. I always thought that their thing was pretty like interesting. Now that I'm older, I kind of think those guys were like dicks, you know. So I more would like to see something about one of the other schools. So perhaps an American wizarding school, or some more about Beauxbatons or Durmstrang, and kind of get into, you know, what's going on there. Because I mean, it's just the magical world, right? Like, it's irresponsible to believe that, you know, they didn't have similar weirdness going on.
Yeah, that's true. They had to have had I wondered, did like Voldemort, was Voldemort like a UK only issue, or was this like a wizarding like entire world thing?
I think it was a world thing, because Karkaroff, I believe, is his name.
Oh, you're right.
He was a Death Eater, so I think that's implied. Yep. But I would like to see how other places view that is a good example of what I think could be a good build out.
I think something that would be entertaining to see would be kind of the fall of a Voldemort centric movie, in terms of the kind of his fall. And you already know that the ending is going to be like him trying to kill Harry Potter.
I like that a lot.
But a look into kind of his entire rise. I mean, you could make it one great movie, you could trilogy it, you know, you could break that up, but really his rise and fall and kind of the story of Voldemort, because you get his really far background and you get kind of why he's so evil a little bit, but you don't really ever see him fall into that. You just kind of see him as like a kid with a lot of issues, and then you see him as like this really horrible wizard. So kind of connecting those gaps would be very interesting.
That would be cool.
Because then you could do the whole first run of the Order of the Phoenix and everything too, so there'd be a lot of character potential there.
Yeah.
It's pretty responsible. Pretty responsible. All right, guys, I think that's it for the week. You guys got anything else?
No, I think that covers it.
Yeah, I think we did a good job. Everybody, don't catch Ebola. Wash your hands and don't sweat on other people and things like that. We've got one death in the U.S. here, so hopefully it doesn't get any further.
I think it's more don't wipe your face with feces that belong to an Ebola patient, and you're generally going to be okay.
I think that's I think hopefully everybody in the country can handle that.
We'll see.
Everybody is a wide swath, KO. You're painting a wide swath.
I got faith. I got faith in my fellow Americans, Christian.
All right. Well, we are Christian, Kevin, and Derek. We are all at keepingitbrief.org. You can tweet us at @thebrief_. You can email us at our first names at keepingitbrief.org. And if you know us, you can come by us and tell us things. We would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week. Thanks, as always, to Laura Peterson for recording our intro.
And thank you to Matt Gravish for putting together our fancy logo.
And thank you to you, the customer.
Thanks, guys. Bye.